These podcasts are brought to you by the U.S. Fund for UNICEF's End Trafficking Project.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I'm Emily Pazak-Lapchik, and I'm the Program Officer for the End Trafficking Program at the U.S. Fund for UNICEF. Our goals are to raise awareness about child trafficking and mobilize communities such as yourselves to take action against it. Most groups estimate that anywhere between 20 and 30 million people are victims of human trafficking around the world today. About a third of them are estimated to be children. Virtually no country is untouched by human trafficking, including the United States, where it has been reported in all 50 states. Worldwide, the industry reaps over $150 billion annually. However, we know that a lot of progress has been made in recent years in the anti-trafficking field. January is National Human Trafficking Awareness Month. So in honor of that, we wanted to bring together some of the leaders in the field to talk about the progress that has been made in recent years. How have awareness levels changed around the issue of human trafficking? What new legislation has been passed to help protect men, women, and children from the crime of human trafficking? What new kinds of reporting mechanisms have been created, and what kinds of technology are being used to address human trafficking? To kick us off, I'd like to turn to each of our panelists, so that they can introduce themselves, talk a bit about what their organizations do, and perhaps speak briefly about how they got involved in the anti-trafficking movement. First, I'd like to turn to Tim.
Hi, I'm Tim Guerin from International Justice Mission. I manage our relationships on Capitol Hill and in the executive branch. IJM is a human rights organization that works to protect poor in the developing world from violent crime. Violent crimes such as bonded labor slavery, commercial sexual exploitation, and child sexual assault. Also land grabbing from widows and orphans. Our model is that we end impunity in these countries and to make sure that those who would perpetrate those crimes are held accountable.
Great. Next, I'm going to turn to Craig from Polaris.
Hi, Craig Heckman from Polaris. We are a nonprofit organization who spans all sorts of different functions within the anti-trafficking space. The largest program that we have is as the operator of the National Human Trafficking Resource Center Hotline, a 24/7 helpline for victims to call to receive connections to services or to receive referrals to specialized law enforcement units about the situation, or for the general public to call in with tips that may be related to human trafficking.
Great. And finally, I'm going to turn to my colleague, Malia Otranto.
Thanks, Emily. Hi, everyone. I'm Malia Otranto. I work with Emily on the End Trafficking Project at the U.S. Fund for UNICEF. And like Emily mentioned before, we are an awareness-raising platform really provided in the United States in order to raise awareness about human trafficking, specifically that is happening right here in our own country.
Great. So to get us started for the first question, I'd like to ask you guys, what do you think the main steps of progress have been in the anti-trafficking field in the last couple of years? And what are some of the recent developments in the field that are working? And to kind of kick us off, I'm going to turn to Malia to talk about a program that we initiated here at the U.S. Fund.
So like Emily said, our program was created in 2012. And so in order to create a baseline for our program, and more importantly, in order to really see attitudes and perceptions of human trafficking among individuals in the United States, we decided to conduct an attitudinal research study in 2012 with the intention of doing a follow-up study in 2014 in order to compare and contrast results. Now, in 2012, the majority of Americans, 53%, did not know that human trafficking was happening in the United States. They weren't aware of it, and it was just not a top-of-mind issue, which is important because it gave our program, one that was only created months before, a lot of backing because we were an awareness-raising platform, and that's exactly what we came to do. So in 2014, we weren't too optimistic about any significant changes in perceptions and awareness of human trafficking, mostly because the study was only done 2 years prior. However, when the results came back in July, we were shocked and pleasantly surprised at the significant shift, primarily amongst awareness in the United States. Most generally, Americans in 2014 and compared to 2012 were far more aware that human trafficking was happening, especially in the United States. Now, there's a couple key findings here. First of all, the general knowledge of human trafficking has increased. There's a 21% increase amongst respondents that actually knew and was able to articulate the definition of human trafficking, that human trafficking is the buying and selling of a person for profit and for exploitation. Also, more adults in 2014 reported to have heard about human trafficking over that last 6 months than in 2012, which is huge because that caused them to say that in 2014, they were very familiar with human trafficking, as opposed to in 2012, only somewhat familiar. Another important thing from the study is that the mindsets of Americans have changed. First, once respondents were provided information and facts about trafficking, and once they were made aware that trafficking is happening here, 7 in 10 adults believe that human trafficking was one of the biggest issues today. It's also incredibly important to note that there was an increased awareness, a significant shift of up 9% in the respondents knowing that human trafficking wasn't just happening in other countries, but it was happening right here in the United States, and that every single state was affected by it. Now, what does this mean? Two big things came from that study. Once individuals and Americans knew that human trafficking was happening here in the United States, they felt more compelled, wanted more resources and support and money allocated to human rights organizations dedicated to stopping human trafficking. And more importantly than anything else, individuals themselves, once knowing about human trafficking and once aware, felt compelled and empowered to learn more about it and to do something to help end trafficking. Respondents in the survey stated that because they were aware that human trafficking was happening in their communities, in their state, in their country, they wanted to do something in order to help end it. This included buying fair trade items and survivor-made products, to putting on Google alerts to learn more about human trafficking or watching documentaries, and to learn the signs and know the indicators of human trafficking. What does this all mean? This means that when people are aware of this issue, when they understand and when they're educated that it's happening right here in the United States, they are compelled and empowered to do something about it.
Thank you, Malia. So I think as you've seen as from some of the results of that research, obviously a lot of awareness shifts have happened, and we'll kind of talk about what more awareness needs to be done. But I think one of the important things is that when people do become aware and then they want to take action, oftentimes we ask them to write to their representatives or contact their representatives in order to strengthen legislation to address trafficking. So at this point, I would like to turn to IJM because I know you guys have done a lot of work to help pass stronger legislation here in the U.S. to address the issue.
That's right. Thanks very much. And, you know, IJM's work, we do our casework internationally. We operate in 18 countries, but we have a strong presence here in the United States where we get advocates involved from all 50 states to make sure that they contact their representatives and senators to make sure that their congressmen and congresswomen know that this issue is very important. This is why, Emily, the study that you were just talking about is so important, and getting the awareness out and making, you mentioned the phrase that people are compelled to act. And one of the most effective ways that normal people can make a difference on this crime is making sure that their congressmen and congresswomen know that their constituents care very much about this issue, that they want them to prioritize this issue through authorizing legislation and also funding that legislation. You know, a lot of times, congressmen and senators, once they hear from their constituents, it allows them the room to vote their conscience on these issues. And unless you make it a priority, unless the congressmen and congresswomen are hearing from the constituents, it simply can get overlooked. So it's very important, if you care about this issue, that you contact your representatives, your senators, set up in-district meetings with them. If you're in Washington, take the opportunity to come and see those offices and let them know that you care very much about this and that you want them to make this a priority. In the 113th Congress last year, we saw a major uptick in the amount of legislation that was being passed from out of the House and into the Senate on that was combating both international and domestic trafficking. And without a question, this is largely due to constituents making their voices heard and letting their representatives and senators know that they care about this issue and that they want to that they want them to pass authorizing legislation. But most importantly, is to fund those authorizations, especially when it comes to spending tax dollars. And in a tight fiscal environment, it is essential that congressmen know that their constituents care about this issue and want them to spend their tax dollars on this issue.
Great, thank you. And kind of shifting gears for a moment, we know that a lot of traffickers are turning to technology both to recruit and to exploit victims of human trafficking. So turning to Polaris' perspective, can you talk about some of the innovative ways that you all and maybe other groups are using technology in order to address trafficking?
Sure, yeah. So at the heart of the call center of the hotline, we database every call that we receive. And we track a whole bunch of different attributes of those calls, the demographics of the victim, the types of situations that they were in, the types of people that they encounter or businesses that they encounter, well over 100 fields that we track for every single case. And because of the fact that we have a relationship with Salesforce, which is a customer relationship management database, we're able to use a customized version of that to track all the information that we get on the hotline in a really useful and interesting way. And then we have a partnership with a company called Palantir, which is a data analysis software company, who has allowed us to use their platform, which was initially designed for data analysis of all sorts within government and private industry, and apply that technology to the data that we receive on our hotline. Be able to find trends that might not otherwise be obvious, be able to find links between potential traffickers, to identify ways that, for example, technology would be used across these cases in a geographical sense and in a time domain sense. So on the hotline, we've been able to do a lot just with data management and databasing and then analysis of that data. The second part is a relationship that we built with a company called Twilio, which allows us to do SMS reception of hotline calls. So there was a recognition a while back that the demographics of people who might be likely affected by certain types of trafficking would be more likely to text a call, and it was a much more discreet way to get in touch with someone to get help because they don't actually have their phone up to their head. And so that relationship enabled us to be able to receive text messages and actually communicate back to those potential victims through text, and it's allowed for a whole different group of people to be able to reach out to us in an effective way. And then beyond that, there's all sorts of other interesting things throughout the field, not necessarily even within Polaris, of ways that technology could be wrangled to be able to apply to different parts of this problem. Actually, a recent U.S. News article came out about all sorts of different ways that types of big data type technologies might be able to be used against this issue, with different types of things on the web, finding different types of records on the web and then cross-referencing those with other data sets that other NGOs might be able to provide. The possibilities are really, really exciting. And you guys are absolutely correct. Criminal organizations and trafficking organizations are able to adopt and use technology really, really quickly. So it's incredibly important that on the other side of that, those who are attempting to help the victims, those who are attempting to hear from the victims, and those who are attempting to find those who are perpetrating against them, it's super important that we also adopt super, super quickly. So it's exciting that there's a lot of buzz within the field about applying technology and applying all sorts of different data techniques specifically to this problem.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing all those remarkable, innovative solutions, and I know that there are many more that we could talk about. So now that we've kind of talked about what has happened so far, could you all highlight maybe what some of the gaps are in the field right now and what some steps are that we could take in order to address those gaps? Leah, I'll turn to you first for some other results that came out of that research.
Absolutely. So although a lot of improvements were made, especially over the last 2 years, particularly amongst Americans' perceptions of human trafficking and the fact that it's happening right here in the United States, there's still a lot of room for growth, particularly with who Americans perceive to be the victims of trafficking. From the study, most of the respondents believe that trafficking victims, 94% in the United States, were young girls that were forced into sex trafficking, and that majority of those young girls, 82%, were poor. So although, yes, trafficking does happen to girls, and although, yes, most U.S.-born citizens are more likely to be sex trafficking victims rather than labor trafficking victims. And at the end of the day, it's really important moving forward in terms of talking about the gaps to really look at this as a very holistic issue, where when we go out into the communities, when organizations talk about this issue, they're not just talking about sex trafficking and minor girls that are coerced into prostitution or pimp-controlled prostitution or other types in that nature. Because at the end of the day, the American perception from this study, and also when we go out into the field and we talk to college students and we talk to community members, the unanimous perception is this is happening here, but it's happening to our girls, and it's only happening to our girls. And that's the gap right now. That's the problem. We need to move away from just talking about sex trafficking and just talking about girls to having a comprehensive approach at this issue, and that's what's going to be needed to happen. We need to talk about labor trafficking. We need to talk about the fact that in the United States, nearly 50% of sex trafficking victims are boys, and that LGBTQ youth and transgender youth are also affected by this issue. We need to go into the communities and tell them that traffickers do not discriminate on this issue, that anyone, no matter what your age is, what your gender is, your race, your ethnicity, your socioeconomic status, you could still be vulnerable to trafficking, and that does not exclude you from it. It's really important moving forward to kind of deconstruct what the social norm is to be considered a victim of trafficking in order to make the general public more aware of this issue and how prevalent it really is in our country.
Thanks, Malia. And I think that we kind of have an idea of where this might come from. might come from the fact that a lot of anti-trafficking organizations that have been started do focus on sex trafficking, provide safe houses for sex trafficking victims, specifically for girls. And I think that the media also has a role to play in this, where a lot of the cases of trafficking that the media highlights are focused on sex trafficking. So kind of maybe this could be part of what you highlight, Tim, is talking about how maybe that portrayal and that perception of who a trafficking victim is has affected the legislation that has been passed, and how we can kind of combat that and what other legislation needs to be passed moving forward.
Sure. So I mentioned, you know, last year there were almost 25 anti-trafficking bills that were passed out of the House, and almost all of them had sex trafficking. And very few of them took an inclusive approach. So absolutely, I would like to echo what UNICEF was saying and make sure that the legislation that's passed, it needs to address both sex and labor trafficking and victims. Also, I think another gap that I would like to point out is a lot of those bills that came out of the House were simply did not have adequate funding. To be honest, when those bills come out of the House and they have a non-funded mandate, they simply aren't helpful unless you're adding additional resources that can go to these government agencies to take on these additional responsibilities. Another gap that I see in the field is that this needs to be, especially for the best practices and services, it needs to be survivor-led. These people who have experienced social services firsthand and have experienced this crime firsthand need to be the leaders on making sure that the best practices actually address the specific needs of survivors. And we anticipate that a will be reintroduced by Senator Boxer and Senator Cornyn. Last session, it was Senate Bill 121. Not sure what the bill will be when it's reintroduced, but it's U.S. Advisory Council on Human Trafficking and Voices of Human Trafficking Act that will establish a survivor-led caucus in the U.S. Advisory Council on Human Trafficking. It's very important that those who've experienced this crime firsthand are the ones who are leading the services on this. And maybe one last thing that I see as a gap, especially internationally, is the level of impunity that takes place. I think that you would be hard-pressed to find a country that where slavery thrives on a large scale does not have a level of impunity. You're exactly right that the United States has a sex and labor trafficking problem, but it certainly doesn't operate on the same vastness that India or Bangladesh does. And these are countries that have a level of impunity with public justice systems. And from IJM's point of view, this is a crime that has to be addressed through strong rule of law and strong public justice system.
Thank you for highlighting some of the legislation that's coming up and also for addressing the issue of impunity. And I know that there's a direct correlation between especially corruption in some countries and weak justice systems and the prevalence of human trafficking. So I really thank you for highlighting that important connection. And then finally, Craig, let's turn to you and maybe you can talk about some, you know, you talked about some of the things that Polaris has done, but what are Polaris and others looking to do in the realm of technology moving forward?
Sure, yeah. So a couple points real quick before I get there. I wanted to also echo just the fact that labor trafficking is quite prevalent here in the United States and that we hear a decent amount about lots of different types of labor trafficking on the hotline. And one more point I wanted to make about that is that a lot of the victims who do succumb to labor trafficking, within the United States at least, are here on foreign work visas. And there's a really other interesting angle that the federal government can play in this fight beyond just funding legislation, and that is providing more open data about the demographics of people who are actually coming into the United States on these foreign work visas, where they're going, how much they're supposed to be being paid versus what they're actually being paid, the industries in which they're going to work. And there's so many different visa categories managed by different groups of the federal government that don't necessarily talk to each other in a good way. That presents a really interesting opportunity for the whole open data movement within the technology space to really start to throw some resources towards really understanding all of the data being published by all of these different organizations, pushing them to publish it more, and then being able to apply some interesting data analysis techniques to understand where all of the potential victims ending up, and is there more prevalence of labor trafficking situations where more workers are going to certain geographic regions, those types of questions. That's one thing. As far as Polaris and applying technology, we have recently started to do more data analysis related work. It's always been very core to the heart of Polaris, especially with the hotline work. But what we've begun to do is take a look at a macro level, what are the types of things that we're hearing about on the hotline, and identify certain high-risk industries within both labor and sex trafficking, and say, what else could we learn about these industries through data sources external to the hotline? So could we go and find other publicly accessible records, whether it be business registration records or property records or those kinds of things, and then overlay those with data that we receive from the hotline or from other places, and could that provide additional context about what these types of trafficking situations really look like. Who are the people involved? What are the properties involved? How are those people linked to one another? That type of thing. So it's something that's really exciting within Polaris specifically, and there's a lot of other external organizations doing data-related work that will be really complementary in that way. And all of that can then inform actual more campaign-type action about rallying people together to be able to attack this problem in a really educated way, because we can have more understanding about what really is happening and not just start hypothesizing about what might be happening.
I think that's a really great point, and I think that the anti-trafficking industry has been very reactive, and we have to start being a little bit more proactive. So it's really interesting to hear about some of the initiatives that your organization and others are taking in order to address that. I think that's kind of a good note to close on, but first I want to turn to each of our panelists and say, you know, just any final closing thoughts on where we go from here, how people can get involved, maybe some good initiatives that your organization has coming up in the next year so that people can help support and be involved with. So Craig, I'll start with you.
Sure. Some of the things that are kind of popping up throughout the anti-trafficking field is just the ever-increasing recognition that about the power of data. Most importantly, the sharing of data between organizations, between other countries, and the opportunities that could. Because as we learn more about the issue and as we share with each other about that information, we together as a field are going to learn more. We're going to be able to create ourselves. We're going to be able to structure ourselves in a way that we're able to better address the issue in an educated way. So I think that's one of the most exciting things moving forward right now.
Great, and Tim?
Yeah, we have one thing I would point people to is Stand for Freedom, which will be happening on April 6th through 10th on several college campuses. Also, IJM has an annual advocacy or lobby day here in Washington, D.C., where we'll be working on a certain piece of legislation, setting up meetings with, last year we had over 300 meetings with Senate offices and House of Representative offices lobbying on a certain piece of legislation. So if you're interested in being involved in that, you can go to, again, freedomcommons.ijm.org. The lobby day will be in the fall this year, and we anticipate a significant piece of legislation being introduced shortly that will significantly increase U.S. government contributions to international anti-trafficking efforts. So we would love to have all of you all involved in making that bill become law.
Awesome. And just to echo what everyone has said, you know, now that you know, go do something. Whether you participate in the advocacy day with IJM or whether you help Polaris with their data and technology driven efforts, there's so many ways that you can get involved. And so I just want to take the time to thank our panelists so much for taking the time out of their day to share their wealth of knowledge and expertise with us. January, again, is National Human Trafficking Prevention Month, so go do something, go take action. We all have a role to play, and we thank you for tuning in.
For more information, check out unicefusa.org/endtrafficking.